This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, Newsmakers, folks. It is Monday, and it's an exciting day to be hosting Newsmakers and a beautiful day to be living in the Mid-Willamette Valley. We have a conversation I want to have today, Dave, me, and you.
Okay.
Minimum wage, folks. Some of you have worked for minimum wage. Some of you still are. Some of you pay minimum wage or higher. But I want to hear from you, 503-393-1430, and this is why. Burgerville was in the news this last week,
yeah.
Burgerville,
yeah.
Because they have a labor union in some of these Burgerville.
That's true. I heard that.
That's a whole nother discussion. We'll get to why anybody forms a union in a place of business for entry-level workers. But it lends itself to minimum wage and the scheduled increases. There's arguments for it. There's arguments against it. So many things going on. All right, so let's lay this out. Minimum wage in the Valley, $11.25. Arguments for, arguments against, and there's a huge push nationwide to drive this minimum wage to $15. My question and my rational brain is, who picked the number and based on what?
Ooh.
Right? Too much of our public policy is being determined and being driven by, hey, Dave, how does that make you feel about it?
Right.
Does 15 feel right? I mean, some people are like, no, it should be 20, and some people say it should not exist.
I want $16.50.
I'd like to hear from somebody else that has an opinion on this. 393-1430 if you want to join us later in the hour.
Okay.
You want $16.50?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Minimum wage.
Right in between.
Everybody has a different, but how do we feel about it? We've talked about this. I've talked about this, Newsmakers, in the past. And frankly, going back many years, I've testified at the Capitol on hearings about the minimum wage in Oregon,
right,
and what should happen. And I told the story about how I got up there first, fortunately, and I sat there and I gave the small business perspective. And then I said, and I would like everyone to be cognizant that this is a discussion about minimum wage, but everyone who comes to this seat and testifies for an increase in minimum wage, we'll start to use the words livable wage.
Right.
Livable wage. Family of four. Nobody can expect it to raise a family of four on minimum wage. It's like, duh.
This is true.
Right.
Right?
Completely different public policy discussion. So when you're arguing over the Thanksgiving table with someone who doesn't agree with you, with your family, as they come to visit this year, and this subject comes up and said, no. Not livable wage. That's a different public policy discussion. That is a different public policy and economic development goal. It's completely separate from minimum wage. However, you see the people who are activists, people who are advocates for a $15 minimum wage will start to say, well, nobody can raise a family of four on the minimum wage as it is. Those people need to stop that conversation, put it aside, and let's just talk about the minimum. Because if I own a McDonald's franchise, and if I'm buying a McDonald's hamburger, should I be paying the clerk who has 14 days of work experience in his life? He's 17 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he's working part-time while finishing up his high school diploma. Do we pay him a wage that would support a family of four? There's the disconnect, people. I'm like, it is so glaring to me. So glaring. I mean, if you're entering the workforce in a minimum wage job, no, it is not a livable wage job. These are
not supposed to be
different conversations.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be.
Burgerville can't come to grips or terms with the collective bargaining of the union that's inside some of these Burgerville locations. It just perplexes me. Frankly, I'd be tempted to just let them pick it and just hire non-union workers.
Right?
I don't know. The union was asking for a $5 an hour raise.
Yikes.
Right? And I'm looking around the landscape, and I'm thinking, there's literally thousands of fast food outlets. Why do you, if you don't think Burgerville is fair to you, go get another job.
Right.
That's how I, especially in this environment, and historically it's not always true. Sometimes jobs are hard to come by, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
In his or history, it's very difficult, and employers get away with maybe more misuse, right? Abuse or what have you, but not now. If Burgerville's not giving you good scheduling and not giving you good hours, if the work conditions aren't right, if you think you can make more money elsewhere, why the heck would you spend any time arguing, bargaining, and picketing? Why don't you just go down the street? You know what I mean? Someone's going to hire you. Do you have work experience? That's bizarre to me. That is just bizarre to me that they're dealing with collective bargaining in a very small employment group.
Yeah, right.
It's not like there's 1,000 workers that they're collectively bargaining for. I mean, how many people? It's probably less than 25 employees, and you're dealing with a collective bargaining agreement, at least in a single location.
Right.
I think there's 5 locations. I don't have the article in front of me, but that got me a thing. And they were offering a dollar an hour raise. I like Burgerville, folks. You like Burgerville?
Yeah, they have pretty good stuff.
It's not cheap, though, is it?
No, I've noticed that.
Right. How cheap would it be if everybody was making $5 more an hour behind the counter?
I wouldn't be going
there.
That's
crazy.
I wouldn't be going there.
Are we going to pay $15 for a burger for a burger so that these guys can make $17 an hour?
And they don't even have that great a service most of the time. Just saying.
Dave.
It's true.
Yeah, if you want a $5 an hour raise, maybe you should treat the customer better.
Right? You should.
Yeah, $1
minimum wage. It's called customer service for a reason.
And they're waving that off like, oh, well, we don't need to pay attention to that because we're going to get that raise anyway middle of next year. So right now, folks, in case you're not familiar and in case you're not following because you have a job that doesn't intersect with minimum wage, $11.25 here in the Valley, $11.25 an hour. It's $12.50 in the metro area and in more rural areas, and this is part of the great compromises, $11 in the rural areas of Oregon. Annual increases are already in Oregon statute to increase until to 2022. So another few years of annual increases until that metro one is, I think it's $14.75 is where it's going. So that equates, you want to do the math? We need like a sound effect.
You did.
We need a sound effect for it. Let's do the math. Some cash. Some
ding, 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 ding. I won the lottery.
22,000 and change. If you're working full time, 52 weeks a year, that's $23,400 a year.
Again, not really a livable wage.
Minimum wage.
It's minimum wage.
Yeah.
Designed that way for a reason.
If you want to join the conversation, we're going to get into pros and cons here today. There's so much to this that intersects social policy with economic policy and fiscal and tax and frankly, social also intersects with social programs policy. There are studies on both sides of this thing. People who do not like increases in minimum wage will say it'll cost jobs. Jobs will be reduced. Companies will be moving towards automation. And they'll take the employees out of it, and that won't work. You see some of this at ordering kiosks at your fast food restaurant, where they've created other jobs in high tech so that you go and you order and you pay at this standalone kiosk, and you don't even see a person, and you get number 47 and so forth. The best argument I've heard for increase in minimum wage to 15 or above is the more money these lower-income earners make, the less they qualify in social programs. There's an offset for all of us taxpayers.
Sure.
So maybe we're doing less rent subsidy. Maybe we're doing less food stamps. Maybe we're doing less TANF.
So we get them off the minimum wage. You get them onto a livable wage.
I don't even know if they're livable, but it... Societally, and for us taxpayers, and then when they try to appeal to the fiscal conservative and the taxpayer, right, they're saying, hey, small employers or minimum wage jobs paid more, there'd be fewer government programs subsidizing those individuals. So it's going to cost us less than social programs that we all have to pay for their taxes.
Until they raise the minimum requirements.
I hated that when you just cut right through to, you know what? You can just squeeze that balloon and it comes out the other side.
Right?
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Some of the arguments for we're going to talk about right after the break. There's a website. It's aptly titled Politics of Poverty.
Ooh.
Politics of Poverty. And it listed six best reasons why this should be increased to $15 an hour right now. And we want to, of course, compare Oregon's minimum wage versus the federal minimum wage, which honestly, yeah, it's a little hard to defend. I'm Brent DeHart, and this is Dave Bourne, and we're talking with you here on 1430 KYKN Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. We're talking minimum wage in Oregon, in the U.S., and in the Mid-Valley here, and how people argue on both sides of it. Before we get to that, hot off the presses today in the news, Bonnie Heitch dropped her bid to be Salem City Councilor, Ward 7. Yeah, they picked three finalists to be interviewed tonight.
Okay.
And she decided over the weekend that her views were too similar to another one of the candidates, and it's not Reed Sund. So Vanessa Nordyke is the remaining. So Vanessa Nordyke and Reed Sund will be interviewed tonight. Bonnie Heitch frankly said, my views are too in line with Vanessa. I don't want to split the vote.
Huh.
Right? So she drops out of consideration, which makes me wonder if they still want to interview three. Right? Or they'll just, we're going to go ahead and move with two. And we know how this is going to go. As we've spoken to the mayor. I gave him a promotion there. He's the governor. Mayor Chuck last week. And, of course, Reed Sund has already filed to run for the seat. Mayor Chuck thinks that all three of these have interest in sitting in the seat and running next spring, but we shall see.
Well, that's why they would put their name in the hat, right?
Yeah. So, at any rate, hot news. So, I'd be shocked if they picked anybody except Vanessa Nordyke. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to pick Reed Sund. So, anyway, that's big news. Big news for our vacancy on our city council. All right, moving on, minimum wage. All right, so one of the arguments, I will tell you this. This is a good story. As an employer, I was an employer that one time and offered a lot of minimum entry-level jobs, right? And when the state started mandating the increases, it was unfair to the people who were good workers. So I would be sitting in front of John, and John shows up on time, and his uniform is clean, and he gives good customer service, and so on and so forth. Good employee. And I'm paying him more than minimum wage. And then a cycle comes around, and the government says that everybody gets a minimum wage increase, right? And then there's not John, but Joe. And Joe comes in, uniform looks slovenly, not very great minimum wage. He's 5 minutes late most of the time. Not a great employee, right? But I have to pay him the same as I pay John now.
Mm.
Right? Is that fair? And so the people who are earning higher wages, who have earned the raise, who are earning something more than the next guy, the money's not there for them anymore because I have to give it to Joe and people like Joe. Right, and there's an argument in the small business perspective. It's like you're taking money at a pool of discretion a small business has to pay their workers, and you're basically saying it doesn't matter if they're good or bad, you got to pay them more. And the people who are even better, there's going to be less money for them.
And, so,
right, if you've budgeted for X number of hours and dollars for wages, there's no more money to pay John for being a great employee. So it does have an upward tendency on all wages, but it runs into one of those equity things.
So you could get rid of Joe and give John the raise and more hours.
And more hours, yeah. Okay, so.
You could.
Yeah. Well, it all depends on the business.
But then he might leave because you're working him to death.
Right. It depends on the business and how much play you have in terms of how many employees you have and how much work the owner has to do and so forth. Let's get the politics of poverty website. This one was interesting. It clearly has a social justice type of perspective. And it's six reasons. One, it's long overdue. Okay. Long overdue.
Really?
That's how they feel about it. They feel it's long overdue.
That was number one?
Yeah. Long overdue. All right. And $7.25, folks. $7.25 is the federal minimum wage. Yeah. If you worked full-time every single week, the entire year, you're making $15,080.
That's below poverty.
Well below poverty.
Yeah.
Yeah. $15,080. Yeah. You're not feeding yourself if you're on your own.
You'd be on the street.
It gets to the question is who is working minimum wage, right? Is it someone trying to raise a family of four? Most of the time, not.
Shouldn't be.
Most of them are part-time. A lot of them are people who is the secondary income, mm-hmm. right? There's already one person working and another person's working part-time to supplement it and making minimum wage. Or it's people entering the workforce who Correct. Are trying to gain job skills so that they can make more money.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it should be.
The concept that people making minimum wage enter into this and they are the breadwinner, false assumption, that they are stuck in that and aren't going to make more money, false assumption, right? If they're not, and they're not using this job for a period of time until they can get a better job, false assumption, right? All right, how do they feel about it? They feel it's long overdue. Let me tell you, $7.25 an hour.
Yeah, that one's overdue.
I'm going to tell you, the whole question, yeah, by the way, don't call in at 393-1430, 503-393-1430 if you think there should be absolutely zero minimum wage. And don't call in if you think it should be $20 because that's the way you feel. But everywhere else, if you got an opinion, be sure to give us a call. Long overdue. Okay. We haven't raised it for 10 years. So I don't like it when they cite, and this one does, what the average CEO makes. It's not really relevant.
Not the same.
It's not really relevant.
Not even in the ballpark.
Yeah. This is
different
gap.
Ballpark.
So a CEO makes $924 every $1 minimum wage worker makes. Well, you know what's great about minimum wage workers, which I was one. Were you?
I was.
I don't remember how much it was. $3.25 or whatever when I started.
$1.25.
Man, you're old.
I know.
anyway,
started out flipping burgers.
That CEO... Unless they're, I don't know, silver spoon types.
Sure.
Potentially, their first job was...
Flipping right? burgers.
Yeah, was minimum yeah. wage. All right. Long overdue. How you feel about it, and that's a matter of opinion. It would address longstanding racial and gender inequities.
Why do they keep bringing that in?
Yeah.
Why?
Let's just talk about socioeconomic class and stop telling me what color the skin is.
Mm-hmm.
That drives me crazy. It just smacks of great white father, right? We need to protect you because you have different colored skin. So we're going to track that you're not making it. We're going to advocate for you on behalf of your skin color. Drives me insane. Or your gender. So that's not irrelevant. I want to talk socioeconomic class, right? And longstanding inequities in social economic class. Okay, let's have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you there. All right. 27% of the total U.S. workforce is making minimum wage, and 39% is black and Latino women. 38% is African-American workers. 32% Latino workers. 32% women workers would benefit. Okay. So
what difference does that make?
I don't know. They're people. They're workers.
Yeah.
They're people. Stop treating them differently. I don't know.
Workers. Right there.
All right. It says it would lift millions of families out of poverty. I'm sorry, but if you're making $15 an hour and only one of you is working, you're in poverty, right?
Right.
If you take two people, husband and wife, I'm sorry, wife and wife, husband and husband. I don't want to be incorrect here. Two married people.
Jeez.
Making minimum wage. They're making about $47,000 a year. $47,000 a year at our minimum wage at $11.25.
Okay.
47 at 15, it's going to be closer. That's going to be over 60,000. We'll have to do the math like we like to do on Newsmakers. All right. Reason number four, it would fuel economic growth. And this is one of the arguments that they flip on both sides. Would a minimum raise increase to $15 an hour nationwide fuel economic growth, or would it stymie economic growth and cost jobs? Both sides, advocates on both sides, believe that they have statistics and studies that proves them right. So that's problematic. According to the Politics of Poverty website, 67% of small business owners support the minimum wage increase to $15 an hour.
What'd they ask?
Who did they ask? Yeah.
Because most businesses I know would be letting employees go.
Maybe they only ask small business owners in Seattle who are already paying it.
Oh.
Right? Okay. Maybe they only asked people who are registered to a certain party. But the argument is that it sparks consumer demand because the employees will have more discretionary income and, then more income, more spending, and economic growth is fueled. Number five, it would save taxpayer money and reduce the use of government programs. I'd like
but
to see some math
iffy.
On that.
That's
it
iffy.
Is. It is.
That's a big gray area.
Because you can, the federal, as Dave pointed out, the federal poverty line is discretionary.
And they keep moving it.
And they can move that, so you can give everybody a minimum and then raise the poverty line, and they're still below the poverty line, and they're still qualifying for
benefits.
It's
a never-ending cycle.
I was in a meeting a couple years back. It was with Representative Schrader and some of the people in the industry and in the area. We're having a powwow, and this was actually several years back, because they were still doing extended unemployment benefits following the recession.
Okay,
right? And it was a year. It was 18 months. It was 26 months. 36. You know, how long could you stay on unemployment?
They cut me off.
The message to Representative Schrader was, "Hey, you keep giving so many benefits to them, I can't get employees." And the calculation was between unemployment, rent subsidies, food stamp program, which not food stamps, whatever you call them, right?
Temporary EBT card.
Yeah, temporary TANF, temporary aid to needy families. Amongst all, you add all of them up, it had a lifestyle of somebody making $45,000 a year. So are you going to go be a truck driver and work hard for $50,000 a year with benefits if you could just sit around and be on benefits and have the same lifestyle and not work? That was the message to the U.S. representative. Like, that was, hey, sometimes the benefits are so rich, it is a disincentive to work. So
I don't know who those people were, because I got cut off on unemployment and I didn't qualify for any of the other ones. So there you go.
Well, that is too bad.
Yeah, right?
Anyway, number five and number six. Again, we're listing the reasons that it's be good to raise the minimum wage as listed by the Politics of Poverty website. It's what the vast majority of Americans want.
A raise in the minimum wage?
Yeah. Yeah. After 10 years of working hard, low-wage workers deserve a bump to get them and their families out of poverty.
Again, if they raise the minimum wage... Again, you pointed out minimum wage different than a livable wage. They're going to move the poverty level up, and they'd still be in the same situation.
All work has dignity and worth.
I agree.
They're right. And so that sounds like some of us fiscal conservative people are like, work, dignity, and worth should be the goal in some of our social programs. But we're not talking about social programs today much. 10 years of working hard, low-wage workers deserve a bump to get them and their families. Now, I have two problems with this sentence. One, how many people have been working a minimum wage job for 10 consecutive years? Right?
Yeah,
nobody got a raise?
No.
Nobody, got to be assistant manager? Nobody shift leader, crew chief, went and got a better job? Went to school, something, finished their schooling and got a better job, 10 years, solid. They haven't had a raise. False premise. And deserve. All of these things are value judgment. There's so many value judgments. And I don't think we should make public policy decisions based on how we feel.
Right.
And that's where politics has gone. You listen to the debates on both sides. And we want you to feel this way about it and then just accept that how you feel should be public policy. And maybe I'm just a cold, stone-hard facts please kind of evaluator. But
I like the facts.
I want an economic evaluation, and I want some numbers and so forth, but not, well, they just automatically deserve a raise. I'd feel better about myself if I knew the person behind the counter made $15 an hour. But why did you pick 15? And where is the study? Where's the math that shows 15 will result in this to the economy, to the benefits burden, and so forth, and to the rents in the area, and all of these, and the prices.
Talk about a ripple effect.
And the prices. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers. We're talking about the minimum wage in the wake of Burgerville, looking at people potentially striking in a collective bargaining agreement, looking for concessions and wages. And begs the question in Oregon, our minimum wage, is it too high, too low? And that federal minimum wage. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. I'm Brent DeHart, and Dave Bourne is with me, and we're talking about the minimum wage. We're talking about Burgerville facing picketing from an organized union at a fast food chain.
And is it, when is that
not
scheduled?
Even all, not even all the Burgerville locations, but five Burgerville locations.
When is it scheduled?
Oh, I think they've already started it. The pickers are already marching on the waterfront. Yeah, signs that say...
Here in Salem?
No. It's in Portland area. Yeah.
Oh, just in Portland.
Yeah, an injury to one is an injury to all. All right,
yeah,
folks.
Okay.
Everyone's looking for good work. You can make more than minimum wage right now. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna show up for work, you're going to show up to work the next day, and you're working, you know, you're reliable. You're going to make more than minimum wage right now. You don't need to waste your life picketing. This is the thing that gets me about, and sometimes the unions are not the employees' friends. They, at Burgerville, by the way, they announced that they took out a $3 million loan to pay for the wage increases that they put on the table, right? $1 an hour, the base, it would be $13.50 for all workers in Oregon and Washington, $13.50.
Just for these five locations.
Yep. So... here's the thing that sticks out of the page at me. There were a couple of other things having the negotiations for the unions. They wanted progress on shift scheduling, you know, understandable. That's workplace, you know, quality of life and that kind of thing. Protection for undocumented workers.
What?
Hello. You have a union,
seriously?
Workplace negotiator and doesn't know anything about employment law? I mean, this is who's representing you? You have something on the table that is... impossible. Protection for undocumented workers.
Yikes.
Friends, many of you have not been an employer, but if anybody earns a wage, they have to sign an I-9 form, and the employer is obligated to document that they are legally able to work in the U.S. You have to look at either, if they don't have a passport, they have to look at a driver's license and a Social Security card and document that they're legally able to work in the United States, or they put the small business at risk.
Right.
Right? So they can't hire undocumented workers. If they know they're undocumented, then they're putting their business at risk. They can't do it. It's illegal. People are not in the business to go around breaking federal law so that they can sell some hamburgers. Wow.
I guess they do that in the sanctuary city. Of Portland.
Maybe they do. I don't know. It just blows my mind that you have union advocates and negotiators going to the table with, well, we want your help in protecting like, we sell burgers and shakes, people.
Right,
it's
and
not,
fries.
It is not our job. And in the right season, those onion rings are incredible.
Oh, right?
Yeah, in the right season.
Or potato skins.
All right, anyway, it's not a small business's job, you know, to be your social warrior for undocumented workers. They're actually, it's the opposite. They are required to not hire undocumented workers. Crazy. All right, going back to the minimum wage, let's talk about, we talked from the website, people advocating for the increases, why. What about why not? And I've touched on some of them. other than it's long overdue, and I'd feel better about myself. So why it should not be raised? Some of the reasons: it would result in layoffs or slower hiring. So again, argument is there'll be fewer labor hours available for people to earn.
Right.
Right. Hire fewer workers at entry-level jobs. So it's harder, and this is true, and we have seen this. So I have personally seen this in the last 20, 25 years, where jobs that used to belong to entry-level individuals, like high school kids, right? They're not high school kid jobs anymore. Nope. I owned a gas station in 1991, and all through the 90s, at least half my workforce was high school kids earning their first. It was one of the more rewarding things about being an employer. Is to mentor them into this is how you behave in a workforce, and you know, this is how you clock in, and you need to be ready to go at such and such. And
teach them responsibility,
right? And you get to mentor them into the workforce. Yeah. By 2000, 10, 11, when I'm exiting being an employer like this, virtually every employee I had was a full time person.
Nice.
That had their own apartment. Not nice. There was no job for the high schoolers.
Oh.
There was no job for the 19-year-old.
Hmm.
Why would I? Because the minimum wage is high enough. I've got 26-year-olds who have rent and a cable bill and video games to buy, and they needed the paycheck, and they showed up their 40 hours. And so the increase in minimum wage actually ended up in a reduction of jobs that would train our young workforce.
Okay. Before you go on, George has a comment.
George, welcome to Newsmakers. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I'm surprised there isn't a whole lot more people calling. I just couldn't stand it anymore, so I thought I'd call. I think you just made a really good point about entry-level workers needing to learn job skills, and this guaranteed wage for entry-level workers, I think, hurts business tremendously, and it's going to eliminate a lot of jobs for people that need to learn work skills. And I think there's a lot of problems with unions in the same sense, where they basically provide a minimum wage to workers who have maybe had some training and met a certain skill level, but yet there are so many of them that really aren't good performers, and yet they're getting the same wages as a fellow who may be a top-notch employee working right beside them.
That's right. It kind of takes away the incentive to do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I know I started out my first minimum wage job, I guess you call it. I got paid $1.85 an hour picking up trash out on the highways, not because I was a criminal, but because that was a summer job.
Wow.
I started working long before that. I had paper routes, cut people's lawns. Kids just aren't doing that anymore, and of course the state's made that difficult too.
Yeah,
we picked crops, we did all kinds of things.
I did all those
went
too.
Went out hunting for bottles, turn in for the deposits, and they were only 2 or 3 cents a bottle back then.
Yeah, now you do it, you're homeless.
Yeah. Well, I have them stolen from me all the time. If I put a bag of them out, and somebody will come by and steal them.
Wow,
George, how old were you when you were picking up garbage on the roadside there?
I was 17.
Yeah, 17, and before that, paper route, before that, and...
Yeah, mowing the lawns. And I even babysat, too.
Yeah. Oh, I did that, too. And sometimes I would mow a lawn and maybe get 50 cents.
Oh, that didn't even pay for your gas.
Small, but then other ones, an average-sized lawn, I'd charge like $2 or $3, and I thought I was in hog heaven,
Yeah.
And I think now we're talking about the same generation that gets, if they go to school, then they complain about the student debt, but they really didn't learn to work first.
Right.
And don't complain about the debt if you didn't, like George, start working when you were 13 years old and learn the value of that 50-cent lawnmower. I don't just go out and sign my name and I'll get $20,000 for the year of school.
I think that's part of the disconnect, They're not working for what they're getting, and they're not appreciating it.
Already been trained that somebody else is going to pay for it.
Right, yeah. Well, free health care for all, and the rich will pay for it.
Yep.
Yeah. The rich is the rest of us. They failed to mention that.
I mean, I think we could probably talk about this all afternoon, but...
Yes, we could.
It's gone totally backwards, and I'm with the small business people. I would like to see them be able to determine what someone's wage should be based on the value of their performance.
Absolutely. Thanks, George. George.
Thanks for calling in, George. We appreciate it.
And thanks for bringing this subject up. It's a very important one.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, George, for calling in and weighing in on minimum wage. Anytime you guys want to weigh in and join the conversation, it's 503-393-1430. We're going over why the reasons the minimum wage should not be raised. And most of these articles you'll find online have to do with the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25. And I don't know if I get my card taken away from me, but I'm like, yeah, raise it over $7.25. That's just embarrassing.
That is embarrassing.
I don't really know what it costs to live in the backwoods of Mississippi. Or something like, but $7.25.
He could live on 50 cents in,
well,
you know, a
I
year.
Don't know. All right. So reasons why it should not. We mentioned one of these. It incentivizes employers to invest in automated processes.
Right.
Okay. Well, automated processes create higher wage jobs.
You know, for the IT guys.
The IT guys plus the people that manufacture that, say, that I'll use this example, the McDonald's kiosk.
Mm-hmm.
That kiosk was engineered and designed and built. And however, this intersects with, it raises the incentive for companies to outsource labor to countries where minimum wages are lower.
Lower.
Right? So then are you taking manufacturing jobs, or not even manufacturing, assembling jobs that might be entry level, and outsourcing those to Taiwan or the Philippines or Indonesia or Malaysia and so forth, or Mexico.
Right.
So that's an argument against raising the minimum wage to $15. This one was interesting. I had not heard it before, but it could result in a higher high school dropout rate.
What?
Can you imagine if you're a junior and you're not planning to go to college and you could walk out of high school, leave your diploma behind, and go make $28,000, right? How many people would walk away from their high school diploma if they knew there's going to be a minimum wage for me that doesn't require me to have it? That's high enough.
So they have no plans of bettering themselves?
Apparently not. Anyway, that's the argument that could result in an increase of high school dropouts. Prices, this one cracks me up, prices might be increased, this says.
Might?
Yeah, might, please. They're going to be increased. I don't know, man. All you have to do, it's cited a lot. But when you go out to eat, and
yes.
Say, why does a chicken sandwich cost so much?
And the big old plate and a little dinky little hamburger.
All right, we're going to have to take our last break. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're going to come back. We're talking about the minimum wage and the hikes and collective bargaining for burger flippers on 1430. KYKN Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Thanks for joining us. Beautiful Monday. We're talking about minimum wage, and I've got Dave Bourne all fired up about the situation of our labor in America with millennials and people's preferences and lifestyles. He encouraged me. I got one story that dates back, I don't know, about 10 years, and I was employing entry-level workers, and I had an employee that, he's pretty good. He's solid. He's here every day. I like it. You know, and so I gave him some incentive, and I said, why don't you take care of this maintenance item and this scheduling item, and I'm going to give you a dollar an hour on top of the guy who's working next to you. And so he did this for a while, and he came back to me at some point and said, yeah, I don't want to do that. He basically asked to be demoted. He wanted to go back, give up the dollar raise. He says, well, it's just, I don't want the responsibility. And yeah, not everybody wants to better themselves, as Dave was asking. Don't they want to better themselves? Well, not everybody does. He actually demoted himself. And I will tell you, a lot of these people that I employed at the time, they worked full time. They were able to pay their rent and so forth. But we went home, smoked some marijuana, played video games, ate some food, went to bed, repeat. And that was their lifestyle. And they had weekends off. And that was what they wanted.
They were happy with that.
Apparently, at least this guy was. He demoted himself. The question about minimum wage that I really would love to have some solid, non-politicized, not emotion-driven facts on is, who works minimum wage? How many people are teenagers? How many people are second income? And how many people have been doing it for longer than, you know, a year, 2 years, 5 years, right? Is it a transition? to better employment? Is it a second income that's because it's flexible and we want to add, you know, this amount of income to the household? There are a lot of statistics that say that it is. So then it kind of shoots down the whole concept that, well, people aren't be able to feed their three kids with this minimum wage job. And yeah, if you're going to have three kids, then that requires you to have the responsibility to look to have a raise,
mm-hmm.
right? You show up early, you leave late, you do a great job. You ask for a raise. If you don't get it, you get another job. Does that sound, make me sound too old-fashioned?
No.
I do think that you shouldn't go whining to the regulators if you're not willing to work as hard as you can to make the money to support your own household. All right.
Isn't that the American dream? Work hard, better yourself.
Minimum wage.
Make the money.
A couple of factoids for some people. It started in 1938, later than I thought. 1938, 25 cents an hour. So the argument that it hasn't kept up with inflation is true. 25 cents an hour in 38 is about $4.55 an hour today. Oh, wait. No, it did keep up with inflation because now it's $7.25. So it's been increased 22 times, but the last time it was increased was 2009.
Ooh.
Yeah, if you believe in having a minimum wage at all, you might want to think in terms of every 10 years is not often enough. I favor public policy oftentimes where things are tied to the rate of inflation. There's a lot of things that do that. They never did that with gasoline taxes going way back, way, way back. Mm-hmm. And then every 10 years or so, they have this long discussion about, well, it's not keeping up with inflation, which is true. Your gasoline prices and the gasoline taxes that pay for our roads do not keep up with inflation. And they argue, well, we got to find a different way to tax you. And that's why around 2000, they were talking about taxing you on the vehicular miles traveled. So
I'd be overtaxed. VMTs.
Yeah. Yes, you'd be utilizing our roads. But they're like, well, we have to find another reason, another way to tax people because the gasoline tax does not keep up with inflation. And I'm just scratching my head. I'm like, really, people? Why don't you just tag it to inflation? And then you don't have the problem anymore. I mean, the electric car is just a different problem.
That is
problem.
Just so smart of you.
Doesn't? Well, yes, I rubbed two brain cells together. Two little lonely unused brain cells. I rubbed them together and it came up with this idea that if the problem is gasoline taxes don't keep up with inflation, that maybe we should tag gasoline taxes to inflation.
Yes.
And then otherwise we have a huge public policy and a huge partisan divide every 10 years or 5 years or however long it comes up to argue about whether taxes should be up. And then they come up, well, you know, it's not keeping up with inflation.
Yeah, same with the minimum wage, right?
Yeah.
Do that too.
I don't want to expect too much, but when all it takes is rubbing two brain cells together, you would think that people could come up with a solution that fits.
You would think.
All right, folks, minimum wage was the topic today. Very interesting topic in terms of what is right. It's not how it makes us feel, but we don't really know. Is it going to cost jobs? Is it going to cost the economy? Is it going to better everybody? Is it going to lower our social programs? Join the conversation next time. We want to thank you for joining us for Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart.
I'm Dave Bourne.
And this is 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.